Don't forget that we will give away a pair of tickets to round one home game three at both 8:20 and 9:20 during today's show. And listen to 106.7 The Fan throughout the day. We're giving those tickets away throughout the day until 5 p.m. Joining us right now on the Rude guest hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Tariq El-Bashir, Caps Insider for Monumental Sports Network. Tariq, we're glad to hear that you were able to make it onto your flight. There were some issues there. We're glad you made it back.
You know, guys, what I always underestimate about the Montreal airport is how long the customs line is. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, I got a little stuck, but I did make my flight.
All good. Good to hear. So this is a chippy series at this point.
Sure.
Each team, to say the least, right? Each team was fined $25,000 for players' antics during warmups before Game 4. Are we going to see that spill over into Game 5 on Wednesday night at Capital One? I mean, the tempers are boiling on both sides, it seems like.
I think there's the potential for it. You know, we did see yesterday that Jack Eye and McElrath both got fined, what, $25,000 for some antics during warm-up. I think they kind of lightly slashed each other on the shin pad that they were both patrolling the red line. But if you rewind a little bit, after the Josh Anderson-Tom Wilson incident in Game 3, the NHL actually called both general managers and said, guys, this has the potential to get ugly. We are seeing stuff during TV timeouts that should not be occurring. I think Logan Thompson got bumped by a Habs player at the benches during a TV timeout. There's stuff that's happening at the end of periods. We need to turn the temperature down a little bit in those moments. We don't care if you want to talk trash during the game, if you want to have big hits, you want to have post-whistle scrums. As long as it's happening during the course of the hockey game, that's fine. We are concerned that something stupid is going to happen during warmups or a TV timeout and lead to something ugly and something that the NHL does not want happening. I said, we are going to be watching this very closely in Game 4. We will hand out fines if we don't like what we see, and that's what they did. And so you hope, I mean, as a hockey fan, I mean, I love the rough stuff. I even like the sideshow stuff a little bit, particularly in playoff series. But I do understand the NHL stance that they just don't want an ugly incident like the one they saw with Wilson and Anderson. Right. That was at the end of a period. That could have gotten really dangerous, right? There were skates flying up in the air, equipment managers and coaches right there. They want to avoid that kind of stuff from boiling over. And maybe those fines they handed out yesterday, it's a lot of money, even to millionaire athletes. Maybe that'll, you know, dial back some of the antics between the stoppages.
Doesn't it seem like the Canadian players are kind of instigating it, though? They're trying to rein them in and to force these things. That's just the way especially in Game 3, that's the way I took it.
You know, I don't think you're wrong, and I think you see this a lot in pro sports, particularly in the playoffs, when you have an underdog playing a team that has more depth and is supposed to win the series, right? One of the ways an underdog can flip a series on its ear is by taking liberties, by getting the better team to, you know, take the bait and get distracted and start focusing on the sideshow stuff as opposed to scoring goals. And, you know, I do think there's something to that. And I feel like the Capitals did a better job, particularly after the warm-up stuff yesterday in Game 4, of not taking that bait and being a little bit more dialed in on the game. You know, the atmosphere there is also just insane. It's the loudest place I've ever been. And I feel like that also served as a bit of a distraction. And when the Capitals came out more focused, and particularly when they took the lead in the third period, that really dials that advantage back, too, for the Habs. So, you know, now they're back on home ice. We'll see what unfolds in Game 5, but I feel like the momentum has swung totally back in the Capitals' favor.
Tariq, take me through the Tom Wilson hit that changed the complexion of Game 4. I can't be objective about it. I'm a Willie Mark. Like, some of the guys in the room thought it was a borderline penalty, like he should have been thrown in the box for that. I thought it was a clean hit. Take me through the hit. Was it completely legal? And look, Tom Wilson has a reputation. Like, if he comes in with a borderline hit like that, that he's going to get penalized and or fined and or suspended. What did you think from the hit on Carrier?
Clean hit. You know, vicious hit, but clean. Carrier touched the puck. He moved the puck. And at the last second saw Tom coming and changed the angle of his body and his upper torso to maybe absorb some of that blow. And Tom Wilson, 6'4", 240 pounds, and came through with a clean hit that, in my opinion, changed the game and potentially changed the series because, you know, the Duhaime goal that tied the game came on that same play.
Right.
And that's what a guy like Tom Wilson brings to the ice, guys. I know it's a cliche, and, you know, people call him a unicorn, and they say that 31 fan bases hate him and one fan base loves him. But everyone would love to have him on his on their team, and it's absolutely true. And the thing about Wilson is, and this is where, you know, as a person who's covered him now for the entirety of his career, you really have to kind of take your hat off to him. He has changed his game to the extent where he is not the type of physical threat that he was earlier on his career when he was getting in trouble with the league, it seemed like every other month. But he still has the reputation that keeps everyone's head on a swivel on the other team. And it's just like, it's a hit like that. You know, he's had some big hits in the series, but that hit right there is going to get everyone on his line an extra 6 feet of space going forward. Because everyone knows that 43 can still lower the boom, and he does it cleanly now. He toes the line without crossing it. And he just is the type of player that wins playoff series for you. And, you know, there's another game, another win that still has to be put in the books. But that hit, vicious, hard, clean, game-changing, and potentially series-changing hit, that's the definition of Tom Wilson.
Joined by Tarik El-Bashir, Caps insider for Monumental Sports Network on the Rude Guest Hotline. A guy who's been really good in this playoff series is a new addition, Anthony Beauvillier. He's got 5 points already through 4 games.
Yeah.
And his effort in just keeping the puck alive when he was getting crunched by 2 Montreal defenders and then just getting the puck on net and Strome gets the rebound, like that sort of hustle play, like Carberry has to love that.
Guys, look, I haven't really delved into the Capitals cap situation yet, but I will tell you this. He came here as a deadline addition. They need to figure out a way to keep this guy around. Mm. I love his game. He's a good guy in the room. Everyone seems to have really taken to him. And I'll tell you, there's guys who are his size that are 5'9", 5'10", who play with the type of intensity and give a care that just teammates just fall in love with, and that's the type of player that Beauvillier is. He's a playoff performer. His history, you go back to the New York Islanders series when he played for the Islanders a few years ago, and he performs in these types of games where there is less space, the intensity is higher because of the way he plays. It was funny, he unintentionally admitted something to me in an interview when I was talking to him, I don't know, maybe like after game 2, he was like, "The playoffs, man, I don't know what it is. I just play harder." I was like, that's funny. I mean, that's a guy who literally just said, I bring my level up in the playoffs. And I was thinking, well, I mean, that's good. If you did it in the regular season, you'd probably make a whole lot more money. But who cares? We're in the playoffs here. But I'll tell you, you know, you talked about the play he made the other day. I go back to the overtime winner for Ovi in game 1. That was all Beauvillier too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
That was retrieving a puck off to the side of the net in traffic, bigger players on him. He goes, he finds the puck, he fights for it, gets it back to the captain, game over, right? I mean, those are just the type of plays. Those are winning plays. He is a dog on a bone, a small dog, but a dog on a bone. And honestly, I don't know how much money the Caps are going to have after they pay everyone. But with the cap going up, I would absolutely find a way to keep this guy around. He is the type of player you can win with.
Talking to Tarik El-Bashir, covers the Capitals for the Monumental Sports Network. So let's talk about LT, Logan Thompson. Most people didn't expect him to play in the last game. How surprised were you that he was on the ice?
Right.
And what do you expect moving forward?
Yeah, how can you put no weight on your leg and then all of a sudden you're playing? And I mean, that didn't make any sense to me.
guys, I was so surprised I wasn't even looking for it. So I'm sitting there in the lower bowl for the morning skate, talking to, you know, a producer or, you know, whatever, just kind of chopping it up. And then I see one right-handed catching goalie go by. Then I see another one. I'm like, oh, what? That can't be. Is that, guys, is that Logan? And everyone, now the entire, there's like 30 media members who are all staring at this one goalie going, is, you know, 'cause they wear masks, you know, we're all like, is that, are those are new pads? No one could believe what they were seeing. I mean, with the way he went off the ice, I was like, he's done for the series, and man, this series has changed. I mean, I know the Habs also lost Sam Montembeau, their number one goalie. Maybe it's even, but no one outside of the room, maybe they already knew. I mean, I'm sure they already did, but we all thought he was out for a while. And so he goes out there, and now it becomes, in that morning skate, okay, how does he look? You know, does he look good? And then within like 5 or 6 minutes of watching, I was like, oh, he's fine. And what a difference that makes for the Capitals. Look, Charlie Lindgren is a good goaltender. Logan Thompson makes the Capitals great. He takes them from very good to great. If you go back to the regular season, when they were fighting for the President's Trophy, the key to the season for me, they were scoring a lot of goals, they were playing well, you know, their depth was really coming through, but the difference for me was the number one goalie, Logan Thompson, was, next to Connor Hellebuck, the best goalie in the league. That is such a difference maker in this game when your goalie has a 925, 930 save percentage and is stopping slot shots and goals saved above expected is off the charts. That's the difference between a good team, a very good team, and a great team. And having him back in the fold, it makes all the difference. He will make that 10 bell save at a critical juncture at a much higher rate than most goaltenders. Has been doing it all year. And, you know, they rewarded him handsomely with that big contract. They expect him to do it for a number of years to come. But I'll tell you, that, for me, when he was out, I was like, oh, man, this might not go well for the Capitals. But now that he's back, and assuming he can stay healthy, that makes the Capitals a contender.
Tark, one aspect, look, they're in a good spot, 3-1. We know these games sometimes have been a little bit closer than the score indicates, but in a good spot. I know certainly in the last game, I feel like this needs to be tightened up. I don't know if it's been this way the whole series, but the power play just seemed a little sloppy at times. What can we do about that?
Yeah, to me, special teams in general are the one area where the Caps need to be better. Power play hasn't looked great. The 5-on-3, that was a big missed opportunity. There's a stat out there. I don't know if it holds true for the regular for the playoffs, but in the regular season, if a team has an extended 5-on-3 and doesn't score, the game typically goes the other way.
Right.
It's just such a big opportunity to take control of a game or, you know, not seize the moment. So yeah, I mean, the power play this year, it's been funny, man. There have been struggles out of the gate, and then it was one of the better ones in the league, and then it kind of cooled off for a while. So the fact that they are able to self-correct within the season and within games sometimes leads me to believe they've got some tricks up their sleeves where they can maybe move some guys around or change some deployment issues there. To me, I don't think the Canadiens' penalty kill is the reason it's not working right now. But, you know, on the other side, the other part of special teams that's a problem is the Caps are giving up way too many power play goals in this series. Mm-hmm. The penalty kill was a top five unit from start to finish. It was the backbone of this Capitals team. Some of it was Logan Thompson playing, you know, next level. But that said, since Marty Farivari went out of the lineup, he was a shorthanded penalty minutes leader. He was out there for more than any other penalty killer for the Capitals. And then Alexi Protas, who, you know, was in the mix amongst the forwards, a very good penalty killer, particularly because of his reach. He was actually kind of dangerous on the PK. He generated chances for on the PK. With those two players out, it just hasn't looked the same. The mix has been a little bit off. And I believe the Habs have 5 power play goals, and they had 2 last game. They have to tighten those two areas up if they want to keep going. I mean, look, it's 3-1. They need another win. You know, we're all DMV guys. We know not to celebrate too early. When you have a 3-1 lead. But that said, if they can get by the Habs and then make some adjustments and get Protas back, and he's right. close, guys. He is close. Get Protas back. Fervari, he's not coming back. He's out. He had surgery on his knee. But if Protas can come back, I think that will be a big difference for the Capitals offensively at even strength, but also might help that penalty kill out, because as the playoffs go down the road and the games get harder and tighter and the opponents get better, you have to take advantage of your special team opportunities. You got to kill off penalties, and you got to pop a power play goal every once in a while to get to where you want to be.
Do you think Protas plays tomorrow?
You know, with a 3-1 series lead, and this is maybe just not. Me speculating, I feel like you got a little bit of leeway. I think if it was 2-2, you might push it a little bit. But the type of injury that he has, it has to be healed totally. That like there is no, like, slap a Band-Aid on it and rub some dirt on it and, you know, grit your teeth and go out there. It has to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I don't know is where is he in that process. I can tell you that he is full go now. He is taking contact. He's got shot blockers on his feet, which makes sense given where that injury is. He's close. But I think with a 3-1 lead, you have a little bit of latitude. I will also say this, though. Carberry was asked about this the other day, that exact question. And he said when he's ready to go, he will be back in the lineup because of what he's meant to our team. So, practice is in a few hours. We'll probably get a better picture here. They aren't going to tell us, but we might be able to see that he's doing a little bit more. Me personally, I would say next series.
Okay.
All right, Tarik. Thanks for the time as always, man. Hopefully you don't have to travel back to Montreal and Caps can close this out tomorrow. It'd be great. Thanks, Tarik.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, guys.
Yep, that's Tarik El-Bashir, Capitals insider for Monumental Sports Network. He was brought to you by Ace Computers. Ace Computers proudly recommends Windows 11 Pro for the U.S. military. Made in America. Check out acecomputers.com. Right now, don't forget, coming up in just about 40 minutes, Mayor Bowser of Washington, D.C. will join us to talk about the potential move of the Commanders back to the RFK site. Coming up at the end of this segment, we'll give you a chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Nats Friday, May 9th, as they take on St. Louis. After that baseball game featuring the Nats and the Cards, post-game concert series featuring our friends OAR.
Very cool. Right.
So we're giving those away at the end of this segment, so keep listening for your chance to win.
If OAR had performed yesterday, they would have had to endure 19 runs by the New York Mets.
That would have been a lot.
Yeah, it wasn't the best.
When you're
throwing your backup third baseman out on the mound for the last inning, that's not a good sign.
It's not great.
He looked like he was throwing 20-mile-an-hour pitches. Did you watch the
lollipopers?
He pretty much was.
That's what it looks like.
That's what those guys do. They can't throw at 97.
Well, maybe that was strikes.
That was a bad.
But James Wood hit another home run. He's up to 9, which is second in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, if you took the over on him,
he has more home runs than Aaron Judge.
Yeah, you're going to win that bet. Because I think the over under on him heading into the season,
19.5, maybe 18.5,
is laughably low.
Yeah, I was looking at the home run totals. Shocker, Mike Trout has 10.
Yeah, but
when he's healthy, he's great.
Well, his home run numbers are good, but look at his batting average.
I didn't look at it.
Is he windmilling otherwise? He's either hitting him out or striking out?
He was under 200.
Okay.
I'm guessing he's probably right around that number. He's at 170.
Woof.
Yeah, woof. A woof is a better hitter.
Not very good for him. All right, so we wanted to get into some audio we have of legendary Terp Boomer Esiason, who's been in the broadcasting game for many, many moons at this point. Here's him talking about Shedeur Sanders and why a bunch of teams potentially did not pick him in the NFL draft.
They took him off, and they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. Shedeur Sanders just torpedoed himself. His attitude off the field at the combine, his dad didn't help him either. You know, he was on podcast talking about, this is my son. If I can get him to where I want to get him to, I'm going to do that. But, you know, when you listen to this kid talk right prior or at the combine about, if you want a new culture in your locker room, I'm the guy to do that. I can turn it around. I mean, he's very high on himself. And I think he was very off-putting to many, many coaches and general managers in the league. And I'm telling you right now, and I know this after talking to three different personnel people in the NFL this weekend. They didn't even have him on his board, on their board. They took him off, and they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. I don't want this entitled person on our team. And I don't blame him.
So that was from WFAN's Boomer and Geo show.
Wonder if that was probably definitely the Giants. I'm guessing it was the Jets because his interview with the Jets was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows who the third team was.
But do you buy that he intentionally sabotaged these interviews because he didn't want to go to New York or didn't want to? You don't buy that?
No, because you're costing yourself money.
I think he had an overinflated.
I think that's just the way
he had an overinflated view of himself.
Yeah.
And maybe he was getting bad information, and they thought, you know, if you're uber talented, you can have those type of meetings and you're still going to be the top pick. Mm-hmm.
You can be brash and, yeah, you can get away with it.
So he thought he could just, instead of, you know, being humble, mm-hmm. he thought he could just be an ass, basically, and still think he was going to be the number three pick or number 10 pick.
To me, that's part of where Dion has to step in and say, you just got to tone it down for the interviews. I know you're confident. You want to be confident, but not to the point where you're going to turn people off and they're going to take you off their draft
board. Some of the stuff that you heard is outrageous, like going in there with your headphones on or then maybe taking them off, but the music's still cranking.
Yeah.
Like that's literally outrageous in a job interview situation.
Accepting a FaceTime call from somebody else while you're in a room with NFL personnel and you take the call.
Yeah.
Albert Breer had two. That does sound
like you're sabotaging yourself.
Albert Breer had two really good examples that he got from executives about the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely troubling. But again, I think Jason brought this up a lot yesterday, and I agree with him. If he was more talented, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
He's just good, according to NFL scouts.
Right.
We'll see. But Breer said, a lot of times in the combine meetings, teams will have a player's worst plays ready for him when he enters the room. And along those lines, one had a particularly rough interception teed up for Sanders in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
When asked to explain it, Sanders didn't take blame, and as they dove deeper into it and how it might relate to the NFL level, Sanders simply concluded that maybe he and the staff he was talking to might not be a match.
I mean, that's just...
Sounds like a really difficult guy.
Yeah, that's not a great way to explain it.
Yeah, and you got to be a really good actor if you're purposely sabotaging an interview because you don't want to play there. I just don't think that's the case.
Well, do you have to act? You could just go in there and just not care because you're like, because you have an overinflated view of yourself.
Yeah. But if you're a top 10 talent.
I think that's what it is.
If you're a top 10 talent and you want to sabotage an interview or two, but you know you're not going to fall out of the top 10, okay, maybe I could see you doing that. But he had to know that he wasn't going to go top 10, like especially as we got closer to the draft.
Clearly did not know.
But,
well, he's not self-aware, apparently.
The other thing about the Giants in particular, I heard one of these NFL insiders say Daboll was in love with Jackson Dart mm-hmm. since January.
Mm-hmm.
So Sanders never even had a shot with
right.
him. Mm-hmm. So Sanders, I'm not defending his actions, but he might have known that.
Mm-hmm.
He might have heard it. Heard some whispers, hey, this guy loves Jackson Dart. And so he might have gone in there with an attitude like, even if I was perfect mm-hmm. in this meeting, he's not going to pick me because he loves Jackson Dart.
But you still should go in there. If you're a professional, try to win the guy over.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Put your best foot forward. Don't just go in there like with your headphones on, taking a FaceTime call, not paying attention, not doing the work that was assigned to you as far as like breaking down a play and how you would run this play in my offense.
I don't know if that FaceTime thing, I don't know if that's real or not. I trust Breer. Breer also wrote another visit. He got an install with mistakes intentionally planted in it. So they wanted to see if the quarterback would catch him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. Coach then called him out on it, and the resulting exchange wasn't pretty.
Right. It's like the $100 bill at the back of the playbook bit.
Yes.
Right.
Did you make it to the back of the playbook and that bit?
Why would it even matter if the Giants love Jackson Dart? There's no guarantee that they were going to draft him. The Saints could have took him at 9.
Sure.
And then what?
Yeah.
Giants still need a QB.
Well, even
that's why you go and you be professional and you work your butt off.
And other teams need QBs too.
Yeah.
It's not just the Giants. I mean, Saints.
And you think the Giants aren't going to talk? You think Joe Shane and Daboll aren't texting their buddies? Hey, can you believe? You're not going to believe the way Shedeur Sanders acted when he came in here. Mm-hmm. This is a small, tight-knit fraternity of guys. They talk to each other.
This is, I'm telling you, the problem starts with the dad. That's why Deion is such an enigma, and I'm so torn on him.
Apparently, Deion was like that in a lot of interviews, too, but he was so good.
Right.
So they weren't going to pass.
But right. Deion is like, there's so many good things that he does. I've seen so many examples of like good things he's done and good examples he's done with his kids. But then he also raises these kids this way, obviously. I mean, that they feel like they can get away with some of this stuff. That it's just, I blame the father. I blame the parents. The mom, too. I don't even know who the mom is.
I'm with you.
You know, if you raise your kid the right way, they're not going to act like this. Generally speaking.
True. I can't be like that.
You should know.
When this is a whole nother level. Right?
But his
this
father isn't Colorado. Also said, I'm not going to let him play for certain teams. You know,
ironically, one of those teams was the Browns.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I think he got drafted, and Drab disagrees with me. I think he got drafted in a horrible spot. I don't think it looks good.
Well, I just think he got drafted in a spot where he'll have an opportunity to play.
He'll have an opportunity.
But it's
at
a horrible
some point.
Franchise.
It's a horrible franchise.
I mean, they went 11-6
He's
two
the, like,
years ago.
The 19th quarterback on their roster.
It's going to be hard for him. I heard somebody break it down, like the amount of plays. He's like, this is what happens in the NFL in training camp. He's like, you get 16 plays. He's like, they're going to go first unit. It's going to do
10.
Four plays, then they go twos, then they get four plays, then they go threes, and they get two plays. And then he goes, if you're four, he goes, you might get one. And then they're going to go back to the ones. And they're
But at some point, listen, that's all true. But at some point, he's going to play somewhere in a preseason game. And the pressure is going to be on. And he's going to have very, very, very limited opportunities to show.
Mm-hmm.
Very few.
Well, that's what JP's
better
saying.
Better make the most of them.
You're going to have you have a limited opportunity in the preseason games, but you're not going to have the reps in practice
100%.
To be prepared for it.
100%.
Unless Stefanski says, we know what Flacco and Pickett can do. We know what our vets can do.
No.
Let's just see the young guys,
they
third and fifth rounder.
They have very little invested in him.
Okay. So
it's all about what you have invested.
I agree. So that's why there's going to be a very small opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Unless he just blows them away and he looks like freaking Joe Montana.
He's going to have very little opportunities. He's going to have to kill it in those few opportunities.
Here's what we don't know. Does the kid take this and learn about humility and work really hard to do everything it takes to make the team first, to then move up the depth chart? Or is the entitled kid who's already made a bunch of money, the jersey sales, already he's number three amongst the rookies. Mm-hmm. He's made NIL money. He comes from money. May just be out of the league in a couple years and be fine.
Correct.
You know, he may
That's
go down.
Probably bet.
He may go down the.
Unfortunately.
It's different, but the Johnny Manziel highway. Or.
Yeah, it's possible.
Or is he more like a Baker Mayfield? And now Baker Mayfield a little different because he was drafted number one. But Baker Mayfield, you know, bounced around a bunch of teams. But he kept at it. Now he's really good with Tampa.
I think the Johnny Manziel example, minus all of the drug and off the field stuff like that,
right,
isn't not a bad comparison, because from what we've learned from afar, from, you know, the father's well off, you know, great athlete, but, you know, didn't necessarily have this burning desire to be some NFL star. Didn't need to. And since he's retired, just plays golf and, you know, is having a great life.
Didn't we learn that the father wasn't as well off as it was portrayed?
Maybe.
Was it a financial house of cards?
I don't remember. I don't know that. If you say so.
I don't know.
If you say so, I believe you. But my understanding was, he was a country club kid that, you know, wasn't necessarily
financially motivated. Have a huge ego and you act like it when you go meet with these coaching staffs, for you not to make the team and be a fifth round, that's the biggest shot to your ego. Mm-hmm. I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, financially, obviously Deion's got money, but it goes way beyond that. He's got to know this is his chance to prove everyone wrong. And I can't imagine him just saying, you know what? If I make the team, whatever, I'm still good financially.
Oh, no.
I think he's going to try his ass off now because he went in the fifth round, and that's the biggest ego shot in the world.
But you might not know what trying your ass off really is.
Yeah, we don't know what's inside him. Like Dylan Gabriel, who was drafted in the third round, what I heard about him is that the the staff, like in the buildings where he was, you know, looking at film, told him, you got to get out of here. We close at 10:30.
Right.
Like he's like legitimately last guy there. Like, is he going to outwork that guy?
Well, we're going to find out.
My early guess would be no. He's probably not going to outwork Dylan Gabriel. And you're probably going to see the results.
Well, and if it's and if he doesn't, it's a huge embarrassment for that family, including Deion.
All right, we're going to take care of the 10th caller right now at 800-636-1067. You're going to get a four-pack of tickets to see the Nationals Friday, May 9th, as they take on St. Louis. Come for the baseball, stay for the beats. Backed by popular demand, the Nats postgame summer concert series is your chance to experience a concert for free with your game ticket. Concerts begin approximately 30 minutes following the final out. This game's postgame concert, our friends OAR are performing. So 10th caller right now at 800-636-1067 wins those tickets. Don't forget, in just about 20 minutes, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser joins the show. Just so the listeners know, need to remind them that we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Caps Round 1 Home Game 3 starting at 8:20 on the hour, every hour, through 5:20 p.m. this afternoon. So keep listening for your chance to win. Starting directly after our interview with Mayor Bowser, which starts at 8. We're going to take her close to 8:20. 8:20, we'll give away the first of a bunch of pairs of Caps tickets that are going to be given away on the station today. I'm just imploring you, if you want free Caps tickets, 106.7 The Fan is your spot.
You want to be there on Wednesday.
It's your place to be. Unless you just like paying for tickets. I mean, I'd rather get free tickets than pay for tickets.
Free tickets is a great deal, Cakes.
It's a pretty good deal.
Can't beat it.
Last time I checked, it's a pretty solid deal.
Yeah.
Would you guys like to know, with 94% accuracy, what is a sign for a future separation from your spouse?
Oh, this is 94% accurate?
According to... I mean, it's just a shaky researcher from an institute I've never heard of.
All right,
of
but
before.
Allegedly he's done some sort of research.
He's done research with all couples. Right. And he says if you come in and sit down with him and he sees this facial tick.
It's a facial tick.
Really? That if he sees it, if you and Dina or Amy and I were to go in.
So if we were both in together, it was like couples therapy.
Correct. If he sees this tick from one of the partners...
He's going to recommend prenup or something?
Well, he says he can predict divorce with an astonishing 93.6% accuracy.
All right, I got it. Eye roll.
That's what I was going to predict.
Eye roll.
It's not an eye roll.
Roll your eyes while your spouse says something.
It's not an eye roll. Any other guesses?
But that's close. Are we in the ballpark-ish?
It's along those lines.
I have no idea. What else could it be?
I was thinking eye roll, so it's something like a facial tick.
You're shaking your head.
It's not shaking your head, no. Want one more guess and then I'll tell you?
All right, hold on. It's some sort of mocking thing. Something that you're doing to mock the other person.
Biting your lip.
That's the closest guess. He brought couples into his lab. And if one member of the couple shows a one-sided mouth raise toward the other, he can tell you if they're going to get divorced.
You mean like this?
Because he's looking for, that's a sign of contempt. What you're doing there is raising one side of your mouth.
I feel like Bickle does that a lot. You have a good one there.
He has a lot of contempt of us.
Are you being serious?
It looked pretty good. Let me see it. Yeah, I like
don't
that
do
one.
That. I honestly don't do that in my relationship.
I might say you do it with Dina. I think you do it with us. Guys? You do it with everybody. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. I might belittle your argument.
Hold on. Let me see this. Like that?
I don't know.
Apparently, contempt, according to the researcher, is the most corrosive of all of the emotional saboteurs.
Drab does that. Drab tries to belittle you with a face.
He does.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, I'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah. He totally
does. You guys want to get divorced?
Yeah.
Drab does that.
I remember reading Blank by Malcolm
JP
Gladwell.
Does it. Yeah.
Malcolm Gladwell had a psychologist who could predict healthy marriages versus divorces. And what that person did, I mean, it's been years since I read the book, but what that person said is he would bring couples in to just talk and they would observe. And then eventually he whittled it down to just like a minute. And the question would be, how did you two meet? And if the couple smiled as they told the story of how they met, then that relationship would be successful. And if they didn't, they'd end up divorced. That was like the theory from what I recall in the book Blink.
Some other telltale signs: eye rolling, mouth crimping.
What is mouth crimping?
Probably, I'm going to guess, like, like you're just pursing up your lips, I guess. Like, just have a salty look on your face.
Yeah.
Even subtle fidgeting, like picking at clothes or cleaning fingers mid-conversation, are silent signals of disdain.
So is this like in premarital counseling, or this is during a marriage counseling? Like, is this before you?
It says,
or this is in the middle of it.
The largest marriage experiment ever done.
Yeah, so it must be
brought couples into the lab. So I guess these are people who are
they've already been married. Yeah,
right.
Marriage counseling.
Yeah,
I would wonder if you like.
If they're already in marriage counseling, of course it's a pretty high percentage they're going to be divorced.
Yeah. Right, but it sounds like they weren't necessarily in counseling. He just brought in a bunch of married couples.
Who knows?
That's what it sounds like to me.
I mean, I glance at the article. You think I've read every nook and cranny of it?
A couple wants to do that, by the way. Could you sell your... Hey, they're doing an experiment. You want to go down to the lab?
Well, I used to do that when I was a psych major. We used to have to do that. You have to recruit students, but you would pay them.
Right.
You know, so you might do it if they pay you.
Sort of like a guinea pig.
Yeah, they pay you $5 or something. You come in and you do this. You know, you'd be in their dumb experiment.
Hey, babe, what do you want to do this weekend? How about coming to the lab with me?
By the way, I should have done that in college because I wasn't really, obviously, paying attention to my studies. I should have done like a medical experiment where they're just going to pay me a bunch of money.
Well,
like,
you know, you should have done sperm donor.
I should have done that. That's right? A great idea.
I bet Valdez did that. Did you ever do that, Valdez?
No.
You never donated?
No. I thought of you, though, yesterday because I watched this video.
Yeah.
And I thought you'd get a kick out of it. I'll send it to you. But they've had the first ever sperm race.
Oh, yeah. I saw
that. A sperm race?
So they had a student from USC and I think a student from UCLA.
Big rivalry there.
All right.
And they donated
their
sperm.
Samples.
Yeah, their samples.
Yeah.
And it was like a horse race.
Doc Walker was there?
Like you put it like on a windowsill and you drop the two samples?
No. It's in like a Petri dish.
Yeah.
And they opened the gate and the sperm raced toward the end and they saw whose student's sperm won.
All right. Who won?
I believe it was the USC student.
USC.
Fight on that sperm.
Right. Well, why would the sperm want to race?
To get to the egg.
Oh, they put an egg on the other side. Is that what they did?
I don't know if they put an egg,
but they—I mean, it was something that it ran to. There was like two separate lanes, uh-huh. And then it came to the middle,
right.
And then one definitely outclassed. It was like the Secretariat of Sperm. Oh, yeah.
Something tells me that the Wizards are going to stick with like corgi races during halftime instead of
sperm races. Yeah,
I don't think that's going to be a halftime entertainment anytime soon.
Right.
Here, I just DM'd it to you.
All right, I'll check it out. It reminds me of, it's just so dumb, but it reminds me of Barry Greenstein. You know who Barry Greenstein is?
The poker player?
Yeah, legendary
poker player.
Of course I know
who he is.
Who would talk about how these DJs, you know how they'll bet on anything. Yeah. They'd be terrible golfers. They'll bet on the golf course. They'll bet on anything at a poker table, at a blackjack table, whatever. He said that Phil Ivey would bet people on which raindrop on a windowsill was going to get to the...
They're full-blown degens. Like D-gens. I said, they'll bet on anything.
Bet literally on anything.
For those that don't know, Barry Greenstein's bit used to be if you knocked him out of the tournament, he would then sign his book for you, and then he would hand it to you. I know that because I've seen...
Is he still alive? He was so old.
He's still alive. Yeah. I've seen many WSOP reruns.
And he's still playing?
I don't know if he's still playing, but I think he's still drawing breath. Last time I checked.
Right.
I mean, that's a good dead or alive. I'm going to say alive.
Oh, the TMZ is actually interviewing the guy that won the race.
Well, he should be interviewed.
Oh, they are. They're interviewing. Yeah, so the winner. Oh, yeah. The winner. the loser looks like an Asian guy. I don't know. I don't know what the winner looks like.
You can watch the race at like 1:44 is when the actual race starts.
Okay, good.
All right. Coming up next, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser will join us. She'll talk about the potential deal to bring the Commanders back where they belong, back to the RFK site in D.C. She will join us next here on The Fan.